I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KrisAnneHall.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. We have a great show for you today. 2 hours of liberty and truth. Going to talk about some things today that I don't know if you're hearing about. We're going to talk about some national things, some local things. I think today is more of a state and local day than it is a national day, with the exception of a congressman that is doing something that's just mind-boggling. Oh, what's that, Chris Anna? Congressman? Mind-boggling? Crazy? We never heard of something like that. Seriously, though, today we're going to be talking about how, while we are distracted by Russian probes, we have states that are working to disenfranchise their own voters. I mean, I'm not talking about segments of the population. I'm talking about states that are working to disenfranchise their entire state from the political process. The Southern Poverty Law Center is at it again, and I'm happy to see that there are people now pushing back. You know, if there's one thing that I can say that is good about Donald Trump being president, it will be the boldness of the people. The boldness of the people to stand up finally against the smears, against the hate, against the discrimination that is brought against conservative groups, against Christian groups. We have people who were not able. They lacked the boldness. They lacked the courage to stand up while Barack Obama was president. But now that Donald Trump is president, we are seeing people renewed in a spirit of boldness to defend themselves. And we've got some people standing up to the Southern Poverty Law Center. We're going to talk about Representative Mo Brooks from Alabama today, introducing a very interesting and should be controversial bill regarding gun control. We're also going to talk on the back on the local things today. We're going to talk about Pensacola, Florida. In Pensacola, Florida, in Bayview Park, for the last 48 years, there has been a cross that stood erected by the local JCs 48 years ago. And we have a federal judge, U.S. District Court Judge Roger Vinson, decide that the cross violates the Establishment Clause of the Constitution and must be removed from within 30 days. We're going to talk about the things that U.S. District Judge Roger Vinson said. And we're also going to talk about how Bayview Park and the people of Bayview Park should be responding to this situation. What should they be doing? How should they be handling the cross in their park? How should they be handling this U.S. District Court's opinion regarding a cross in Bayview Park, Pensacola, Florida? I'm also, I hesitate. I always tell you that I'm going to be doing things, and then the last thing that I mention, we never get to. So let me say this. Right now, this is what is on our plate. If we have extra time, we will deal with extra things. But I want to start off our first hour talking about how these states are disenfranchising their own voters, because there's a lot of misconception running around, and we need to clear up. We need to speak truth. We need to take back the narrative, and we need to teach truth about what's going on in this situation. On Wednesday, the Oregon House passed legislation, which is HB 2927, that would make Oregon award its Electoral College votes only to presidential candidates who win the national popular vote. I hope my Salem people are listening, because this is very important. I hope my Elgin people are listening. I hope my Chicago people are listening. This is very, very important, because this affects you. According to National Popular Vote, this kind of legislation has already been passed by 11 states. California. Well, they have Washington, D.C. listed as a state. I think it should be 10 states and Washington, D.C. Because you know that Washington, D.C. is not a state, right? I mean, we should know that. They are not a state. So they don't get state status. They don't get the same kind of power in Congress. So let's correct Oregon Live. Let's correct National Popular Vote. This kind of legislation has already been passed by 10 states and Washington, D.C. Those states are California, Hawaii, Illinois, Massachusetts, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington. Now, they're billing this as an end to the Electoral College, abolishing the Electoral College. You will actually see that in the headlines that are reporting this. Oregon abolishing the Electoral College. Illinois has abolished the Electoral College. But they are not abolishing the Electoral College. To abolish the Electoral College, they would have to amend the Constitution, which would require following the Article 5 process. I wonder, with an Article 5 convention, if that would be an amendment to the Constitution that would be proposed by California, Hawaii, Illinois, Massachusetts, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington. If you had 10 states within a constitutional convention offering an amendment to amend the Constitution so that we abolish the Electoral College, how would the convention be able to ignore such an amendment? They would have to seriously consider that, I think. But right now, that's not what they're doing. Right now, they are passing a state compact bill. A state compact is where a single piece of legislation is written, and then each state votes through legislative process to adopt the interstate compact as part of their own law. So California, D.C., Hawaii, Illinois, Massachusetts, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington have all adopted this interstate compact. Oregon is considering it. They've passed it in the House. Now it will go to the Senate. Let me make a mention to you, my Salem, Oregon people. If you make an effort to get in touch with your senators now. You could stop this from happening. You have a solution to this problem. And let's, and I think what we need to do is give you the tools necessary to speak to your senator and tell them why this is bad. Article 2, Section 2, Clauses 2 and 3, and the 12th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution all require the states to establish electors that will choose the president and the vice president of the United States. Now, those of you who are longtime listeners, you know from our lessons here on the show that we don't follow the 12th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution anymore. We haven't since FDR. We didn't amend the Constitution. We just somehow politically through our parties decided we weren't going to follow it anymore. That was something that we carried on our show already in detail. But just to sort of let you know, the 12th Amendment requires two separate ballots, one for the president and one for the vice president. There, constitutionally speaking, there is no such thing as a running mate. That is a political invention designed by political parties circumventing the Constitution. Can we just simply say amending the Constitution without legal amendment? So we are not operating our presidential, vice presidential elections constitutionally speaking. We are operating unconstitutionally when we elect running mates. The vice president of the United States is to be elected on a separate ballot on the same conditions that the president is elected. And Article 2, Section 2, Clauses 2 and 3 in the 12th Amendment demand that electors within the state elect the president and the vice president. Now, these states are not eliminating their electoral college. They're doing something worse. They are eliminating the voice of their citizens and eliminating the legitimacy and relevance of their state's involvement in the political process. They are, by adopting this National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, in short, disenfranchising the vote of their entire state. It's hard to believe, isn't it, that people would create their own demise. When we get back from the break, we're going to explain how this is going to work.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
I believe part of the confusion that we have here with this national popular vote and the electoral college exists because we as Americans have not been teaching that there is a purpose for the electoral college. We have so long deviated from proper constitutional education that we no longer understand the proper function of government. We no longer understand the proper role of certain departments and branches of government. And we've lost touch with the specific reason that the Electoral College must exist. And because we have failed to teach this for so very long, a large number of Americans believe that the Electoral College is a process that was invented in the 1700s to maintain slavery in America, that it's an invention of the 1700s that is no longer relevant today because we're a different people with a different kind of politics. Because we have failed for generations to teach an accurate application of the Constitution. We have people like Oregon Representative Alyssa Kenny Geyer who believe that the Electoral College is flawed and outdated. Representative Kenny Geyer told Oregon Live that the Electoral College does not fit with the we the people and one person, one vote style of government. Representative Kenny Geyer and those who believe like she believes do so out of ignorance. They do not understand why the Electoral College was established and how the Electoral College process actually protects her individual liberty and the sovereignty of her state. The sovereignty of your state, as you know, is essential in the protection of your liberty, and the Electoral College is part of that design. I think there are deeper issues here as well. The Electoral College within each state is not operating the way it was intended because America has devolved into a two-party system. The Electoral College was created to ensure that the states have equal representation in the choosing of the President of the United States. Now, because we have just simply two political parties, two choices that the American people feel that they have to choose from, the Electoral College isn't working properly because it is ruled by political party and not by principle of the state. So not only does Kenny Geyer and those who believe as she does not recognize that the Electoral College process was created to protect her liberty, she also, and those who think like her, don't realize and don't understand that no state in these United States, Oregon including, are democracies. America is not a democracy. Every state in this union is required to be a constitutional republic on the state level, and the union as a whole is a constitutional republic. And this incessant push toward being ruled by majority opinion is supposed to be antithetical to the American character. Unfortunately, the dearth of real education in America has created an equal scarcity of understanding about America's fundamental principles. The process of the Electoral College was established to ensure that the person elected to be President of the United States would accurately represent the Union as a whole, not favoring certain states while ignoring others. A national popular vote would eliminate that equal representation, would eliminate the voice of each state in the whole. So don't let them steal your life. Don't let them break your stride.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Now you realize the problem here, right? You realize the problem is that we've been teaching for decades our young people that we are a democracy. We are not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic. Contrary to popular belief, we are not a one-person, one-vote style of government on the federal level. That's who you are on the state and local level, because that's where your power rests, in one person, one vote. But the function, in order for the federal government to function properly, we must operate understanding that there are two spheres within the national government. There is the one person, one vote sphere within the national government, and then there is the state sphere within the national government. The office of the president, contrary to popular belief, was never designed to be a representative of the individual citizens, but rather a representative of the collective interests of the states. The president is not established on a one-person, one-vote basis. He is not a representative of the individual people. The president was designed to be a representative of the states. A survey of the powers delegated to the president via Article 2 of the Constitution makes the role of the president clear. He is not the president, is not the, quote, leader of America. He is the leader of the military upon declaration of war by Congress. He is a part of the treaty process that makes contractual agreements with foreign governments and the states as a whole. He's a part of that process. Most everything that the president is to do, he does only with the consent of the Senate, the voice of the states. You see, the Senate is not a representative of the people either. I know that's confusing to talk about because we elect our senators now, one person, one vote, electing the senators, but that's not how our senators were designed to operate. When the Constitution was written prior to the 17th Amendment, senators were chosen by the state legislators. They did not have terms of office that were specific. They had terms of office that were designed to be at the will of the state. So the state, through the voice of the people, of their representatives at the state level, chose a senator to represent that state. And the moment that senator did not operate according to the best interests and the will of the state, that senator was fired. This is the ultimate term limit, by the way. Automatic recall is the ultimate term limit. If we want to restore term limits to our federal government, we need to place them on automatic recall, meaning that the people of the states, through their representatives, come together and fire their senator. You no longer operate based on the best interests of our states. You no longer seeking the will of the people, operating according to the will of the people in our states. So we are going to fire you. That's the term limits we should be shooting for. That's the only kind of term limits that will ensure a liberty perspective. And so we have to recognize that the Senate is the voice of the states. The Senate is supposed to equally represent the states in national affairs, to be a voice to ensure that the union does not prefer one state over another or penalize one state in favor of others. Together, the president and the Senate ensure that each state's interests are represented equally in matters of war, peace, and foreign commerce. The office of the president was established to be the voice to foreign countries on behalf of the collective states. Because he is a representative of the states, the electors of the states are to choose their president based upon the person they believe will best represent the principles and interests of their state. There is no power delegated by the Constitution to the president that authorizes him to directly affect the lives of the people. The only power held by the president to touch lives individually would be that power to grant reprieves and pardons for federal crimes, and that was established to be a check and balance upon the judiciary, not a system of personal favors to individuals. And because the president's role in government is to be an ambassador on behalf of the states must choose their representatives. The popular vote for the president that takes place within the states ensures that the principles and the interests of the people of the state guide and direct the electors in their choice of president. These subtle distinctions are hard for Americans to grasp since we perceive our nation today as to be a unitary whole where the states provide support to the central government that directs them. We have forgotten that our republic is a collection of independent sovereign states who created Washington, D.C. to represent their interests. So the Electoral College is established not to pick one political party over another, but to take the voice of the people within that state, the things that the people of that state believe are the principles and the virtues and the politically important issues that their president should address within his delegated powers, and choose a president based on the principles and politics of that state. Changing the Electoral College to choose a national vote rather than a local vote undermines the very reason the Electoral College was created. The national popular vote movement takes us even further away from our constitutional structure by removing the independence of the states and eliminating their voice of the people within those states. This interstate compact, this legislation proposes that once a popular vote is complete across the nation, each elector of the state must choose the person elected by the national popular vote, regardless of the collective choice of his fellow state citizens. This legislation mandates that each state submit to the popular choice, regardless of whether that candidate best represents the interests and principles of the people of that state. Through popular vote, the individual state would become completely irrelevant in the process of the federal government. The president would no longer be required to ensure all states' interests were represented in matters of foreign affairs. The president's only concern throughout the entire 4 years of his term would be to make sure that the select few states with the greatest voting population were happy and pleased with the execution of his power. It would be like Georgia surrendering all of its voice to New York and legislating themselves out of the political process, or like Connecticut asking Texas to decide what is the best interest of Connecticut. Future presidents could then ignore all but a few states. All treaties could be focused upon the prosperity and growth of these select few states, and at best ignoring the rest, at worst requiring the lesser populated states to enrich the other states via treaty and regulations. All wars could be conducted in the interest of a few states, and all peace could be negotiated to benefit the few over the whole. This is the complete opposite of proper function of the federal government. The federal government was created to be a unified voice for the whole. I have to think that this also stems from our errant teaching of the application of the General Welfare Clause. The General Welfare Clause was not established so that the federal government could hand out welfare checks. The General Welfare Clause was established in response to a hole within the Articles of Confederation in which our federal government was doing exactly this. Our federal government was making inequitable treaties where one state or one set of states got all the benefit and another state or another set of states had to foot all the bill. It nearly brought about the immediate dissolution of the Union, these inequitable treaties. So the General Welfare Clause was established to ensure that the federal government never forget that its focus, its perspective, its agenda had to always be the entire welfare of the Union, not just one state over another. Under the national popular vote system, cabinet members and Supreme Court justices could be chosen from persons of those few states because there'd be no reason to make an equitable search. Every state that did not hold the majority voting population could be relegated to being a spectator in the entire political process. Charles Cotesworth Pinckney, a delegate to the Constitutional Convention, summed up what was not only the popular belief of the delegates, but would also become the controlling belief in establishing Article 2, Section 2, Clauses 2 and 3 of the Constitution. He classified a national popular vote of the president to be liable to the most obvious and striking objections. He said that if the people were to elect the president by popular vote, quote, they would be led by a few active and designing men, the most populous states, by combining in favor of the same individual, would be able to carry their points. You see, here's the interesting thing. This debate over a national popular vote already took place. Our founders already debated the issue and they came to the obvious conclusion that the states must be represented equally, not by popular vote. The weapon of my choice, don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your own man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So this discussion has already taken place. We've already discussed the pros and the cons of a national popular vote. And the designers of our constitutional republic, in their wisdom, said no. We cannot allow certain states to rule over the entire union. We cannot allow this to happen. Not only will the states be silenced in their political affairs nationally and in foreign negotiations, the national popular vote would ensure that the people themselves are silenced. I mean, seriously, what would be the point in voting if you didn't live in New York, Texas, California, or Florida, where the majority of the voting population resides? Every presidential election would be chosen by these few states, and these few states would grow and maintain their voting power because the national popular vote system would ensure the enrichment of these few states over every other state. A national popular vote is a misnomer, it's an oxymoron, as it would only reflect the voice of the majority, denying every person in their state a voice in the presidential election. Those who cry for a national popular vote do so out of ignorance, yet madden on to their own destruction. Oregon and states like her will not achieve a greater voice with the elimination of the constitutional process of the Electoral College. They will ensure their political irrelevance from this day forward. And once again, as Samuel Adams commented, it is ignorance that is making the people become their own worst enemy. The argument in favor of one person, one vote, national popular vote movement says it's the majority of the people who are making this choice. Why would that be a bad thing? I mean, if the majority of the people in the country want this president, shouldn't the majority of the people in America get that president? Well, here's the problem with that argument. Who are the majority? Where do they come from? You see, America is unique because we are a melting pot. It's diversity that we hear people cry for. We need to be respected in our diversity. We are not a homogenous culture across the United States. When you think about the Ninth Circuit, isn't that, that's the Ninth Circuit, and they have a whole different way of thinking over there. What about those California people? Well, they have a whole different way of thinking than those Texas people. And those New York people, well, they think totally different than people of Idaho. So we have to recognize that within each state is a distinct culture of people. And when we're operating by the national popular vote, what we're saying is the people in the densely populated areas of New York, Texas, California, Florida will carry the vote. City people will elect presidents, silencing every other voice within the state, every other voice within the country. So the California, Florida, New York, Texas people will be choosing the president. What about the Idaho people, the Nebraska people, the Kansas people, the Illinois people, the Oregon people? They will no longer have diversity in their voice of president. But if you look at this as a whole, it's not really the state of Texas, the state of California, Florida, or New York. It's Austin, Houston, Dallas, New York City, it's San Francisco, it's LA, it's Miami. Pull out a map that makes political demarcations on the local level. Where is all the red? Where is all the blue? What we're talking about here in a national popular vote movement is that the densely populated cities within these few states will choose the president for every other person in the United States. This is the complete destruction of any voice in politics for rural people. There will be no more rural vote. It will not be a diverse America anymore, politically speaking. We will be simply a dictatorship. Cities dictating to the rural areas and to the rest of the country how politics are to work. This is not the national popular vote movement. This is the urban popular vote movement, ending diversity in America. Well, we have a whole nother hour of the show to go. So many things to talk about. This is something that we can get involved in. Get with your state and stop this urban national vote movement. When we come back, we're going to talk about guns and crosses and government.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
My fellow patriots, mark your calendars and make plans to attend the God, Family, Country, Truth, and Liberty Conference on August 12th in Olive Branch, Mississippi. This is not just for Olive Branch, Mississippi. This is not just for Mississippi. This is for every person in America. Man, woman, child who is interested in knowing the truth to defend liberty. C.L. Bryant will be there. Motivator. Man, is he a motivating speaker. He is a radio host, syndicated radio host, activist, and minister of the gospel. You know C.L., he works with Freedom Works. And he's the creator of the film Runaway Slave. Pastor and founder of the Black Robed Regiment Ministry, Dan Fisher, will also be a headline speaker. And I'll be there too. You will not find a greater lineup of champions for truth and liberty to inspire you in the fight to restore our republic. Tom Minyard, the chairman of the DeSoto County Conservative Coalition, is putting together this God, Family, Country, Truth, and Liberty Conference. And we hope that you will plan on being there. There will be hotel rooms available for you. We've blocked out hotel rooms at the Hampton Inn in Olive Branch. It is right just 20 minutes from the Memphis airport, so you can fly in. Make this a family vacation. What a better way to spend your family vacation than to learning about truth and liberty in the defense of our republic. I'm very excited about this, so I'm going to be talking about this up to the point of the event. This is going to be an amazing thing. I cannot wait to be a part of this. I'm excited about Pastor Dan Fisher and C.L. Bryant's message. If you're not familiar with Pastor Dan Fisher and his Black Robed Regiment presentation, man, go online and look for him, Dan Fisher, Black Robed Regiment. He is an amazing presenter. His presentation is just phenomenal. C.L. Bryant, words just simply cannot describe the power in which this man speaks. I would gather to say that we would all make it to the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate group list. Well, you know I am on that list, right? 2 years in a row now, the Southern Poverty Law Center has identified me as a hate group. 996 groups across America and me. I'm the only individual on the group. I find that to be a badge of honor that the Southern Poverty Law Center hates me so much that they classify me as a group. But there are people fighting back now. People fighting back against the Southern Poverty Law Center hate group, because it's interesting. I think it's, what is that psychological thing? Deflection, right? They call everybody else a hate group to cover up for the fact that they are the hate group. They're the ones that are going around breeding contempt and hate for other people. Certainly not me. I'm not running around breeding contempt and hate for other people. We unify in liberty. All men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. A self-evident truth. It is the Southern Poverty Law Center that is breeding hate and division in America. But now, there's this group classified as the nation's leading source of information on U.S. charities that has taken up the agenda of the Southern Poverty Law Center. This group is called GuideStar, calls itself a neutral collector of tax data on charities. Recently, they incorporated a, quote, hate group label that was produced by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Now, this group, GuideStar, is supposed to be tracking nonprofits and telling people who are the most productive, most reputable nonprofits in America. But their use of the hate group designation for certain organizations, shock, awe, most of them Christian, not only unfairly, but inaccurately adopts this aggressive political agenda of the Southern Poverty Law Center. And there are people pushing back. 41 conservative leaders working together to protest GuideStar's move to the Southern Poverty Law Center in a letter provided exclusively through the Daily Signal. Among these organizations that are protesting GuideStar's move to the Southern Poverty Law Center are the Family Research Council, the American Freedom Defense Initiative, the Immigration Reform Law Institute, the American College of Pediatricians, the National Task Force for Therapy Equality, the American Family Association, the London Center for Policy Research, and the Jewish Institute for Global Awareness. In a letter to GuideStar, President and CEO Jacob Herold. The conservative leaders write, quote, "We, the undersigned organizations and individuals, write to express our strong disagreement with GuideStar's newly implemented policy that labels 46 American organizations as hate groups. Your designations are based on determinations made by the Southern Poverty Law Center, a hard left activist organization. As such, Southern Poverty Law Center's aggressive political agenda pervades the construction of its hate group listings." If GuideStar is going to be a neutral organization, as they say they have been, a neutral public charity, they call itself, using the Southern Poverty Law Center pretty much wipes out that neutrality. Our friend Matt Staver is a signer of this. General Boykin is also a signer of this. And I just mention this because I think that it's good progress. Good progress that people are beginning to stand up. You know, the Southern Poverty Law Center has had this hate group list for a long time. And some of these organizations have been on the hate list group for a very long time as well. So maybe the boldness of Donald Trump is trickling down across America and is giving people the courage to finally call out these people for who they are. I think that the Southern Poverty Law Center classifies themselves. I think that people who support the Southern Poverty Law Center do so because they believe like-mindedly in what they preach. But I also believe that when the Department of Justice uses Southern Poverty Law Center groups to create training for our Department of Defense, for our Department of Justice employees, that the people must speak up. And I believe that when people, to gain membership, donors profess themselves to be neutral and adopt the choices of the Southern Poverty Law Center, we as a public must call them out for their hypocrisy. Believe what the Southern Poverty Law Center has to say. That is your choice, whether it be through knowledge or through ignorance. That is still your choice. But it's time that we start pushing back against the hypocrisy. It's strange, you know, because several of the last shooters were supporters of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Floyd Corkins, the man convicted of 2012 attempt to massacre employees at the Family Research Council, said that he was inspired by the Southern Poverty Law Center's description of the Christian pro-family research organization as a hate group. James T. Hodgkinson, the man who tried to gun down Republican lawmakers last week, was an avid supporter of the Southern Poverty Law Center through his social media. How is it that I'm a hate group and the Southern Poverty Law Center is not? These people obviously acted individually. I am not calling for any type of legal action to come against Southern Poverty Law Center. What I am pointing out is their hypocrisy. And I'm just excited. I'm excited that more people are feeling the boldness to call them out as well. So we have lawmakers being attacked at a baseball practice in Alexandria, Virginia. And we have Representative Mo Brooks from Alabama saying that he will introduce legislation in the coming weeks to allow congressmen and senators to carry guns in the wake of the shooting that occurred there in Alexandria, Virginia. Representative Mo Brooks wants to introduce legislation to amend federal law and federal gun regulations to allow congressmen and senators to carry guns. Anybody see a problem with that? Anybody see what's wrong with that? Well, when we come back after the break, we will give you the tools to contact Mo Brooks and correct his error. The weapon of my choice, don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Representative Mo Brooks from Alabama says in the wake of the shooting in Alexandria, Virginia, where legislators were practicing for the congressional baseball game, he's going to submit legislation that will permit congressmen and senators to carry guns. Isn't that interesting? Congressmen and senators to carry guns. I think Mr. Brooks needs to go back and read the Second Amendment. A well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of the free state, the right of the people, not senators and representatives, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That word is shall not is a mandate. It's a dictate. Shall not means not allowed, ever, possible, in the future, ever, for any reason whatsoever, shall not. What we have here, if we're just going to be truthful about the whole thing, is Representative Mo Brooks wanting to create a law that exempts politicians from the laws that they want to enforce upon us. In the midst of all the federal laws mandating permits, banning firearms and gun-free zones for you and me, Mo Brooks is proposing that they should be exempt from those because they need to protect themselves. Isn't that what the Secret Service is for? Shouldn't the Secret Service carrying guns be good enough for our congressmen? I mean, that's more than what you and I have. Why can't your congressman call 911 like the rest of us? I mean, if it's good for us, if it's sufficient for us to call 911 to be secure in our persons, houses, papers, and effects, why isn't that good enough for your congressman? The Second Amendment was codified so the government wouldn't be permitted to disarm the people. The designers of our constitutional republic also warned that the people should never be allowed, should never allow the government to outarm them either. Lives are precious. All lives are precious. And congressmen should have no more right to protect their lives than we have to protect our own and those of our family members. How far have we come? When congressmen are so confident in their power, so convinced of the brainwashing of the people, that they can boldly proclaim legislation contrary to the laws they've created for the people, contrary to the supreme law that binds them. If Mo Brooks wants to protect the lives of congressmen, and I want to protect the lives of congressmen, Mo Brooks also must recognize that I want to protect the lives of my family and friends as well. And the only piece of legislation Mo Brooks should be proposing is one that revokes all federal gun laws. If Mo Brooks will propose a piece of legislation that removes the federal government from the regulation of firearms. He will not only be constitutional, he will not be empowering tyrants. The interesting thing is he doesn't have to propose legislation at all. The national reciprocity legislation that Representative Richard Hudson put forward in January deserves his political support, his political clout. In light of what has happened at this baseball practice, our congressman should be saying, this is exactly why we must create national reciprocity that not only exists in every state, but exists in Washington, D.C. itself. Mo Brooks should not be saying we need a piece of legislation that exempts congressmen from federal laws. He must be saying that this national reciprocity legislation that my colleague Richard Hudson has proposed must be adopted so that everyone can protect themselves, no matter where they are. There had to have been civilians at that baseball practice. Why would you want to just exempt congressmen? The national reciprocity is what is needed. The Gun Owners of America says that this legislation has 199 co-sponsors. In light of what has happened at this baseball practice, all 199 of them should be saying, we don't need additional, we need to pass this national reciprocity. With national reciprocity, everyone at that baseball practice would have been protected.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
This is another action matter that we need to talk about, because I think as a people we need to express our correction. See, if Mo Brooks thinks that this is something that the public will rejoice and rally around, then we need to make it clear to him that we will not. See, it doesn't matter if you're in Alabama. We should be contacting Mo Brooks and telling him, no, man, if you're going to make gun legislation because you feel that the lives of congressmen are important, then you must also recognize that those lives are precious to us as well, of our family members, of our friends, and that we should all have an inalienable right to keep and bear arms absent the control of the federal government, as the Constitution demands. There's an article on my website called The Right to Keep and Bear Arms, Protection from Tyrants. This will give you the founder's ammunition and support of the Second Amendment. I suggest you go to chrisannhall.com and get The Right to Keep and Bear Arms article there and read up on that and get educated. But I think that we should also be contacting Mo Brooks. His office in Washington, D.C., his phone number is 202-225-4801. 202-225-4801. We need to be contacting him and letting him know that his bill should include everyone, not just senators and representatives. Remind him that the Second Amendment addresses the people and their right to keep and bear arms, not politicians' right to keep and bear arms. It is not enough to eliminate federal laws for just congressmen. The Second Amendment is clear on this prohibition for the federal government to be involved in our right to keep and bear arms. Remind Mo Brooks that if he is going to offer up any legislation, it should not be just to allow congressmen to carry guns. It should be a national reciprocity for all. Brooks is a co-sponsor of this National Reciprocity Act. I would love to see him using this moment and his clout to push that instead of additional legislation that is contrary to the Constitution and contrary to the purpose of our Second Amendment. And I believe that this, again, stems from a pervasive ignorance across America as to the Second Amendment and the right to keep and bear arms. If Mo Brooks does not get correction from the people, then he is not a representative of the people. It is our job to let him know whether we agree or we don't agree, and point him in the proper direction. That is the political process. Our job is to make sure that they hear us. How will he know that we don't agree if we never say anything? So we agree that life is precious. We agree, which is interesting because we agree that the ability to keep and bear arms is essential to the preservation of that life. So while we're all agreeing, we cannot have legislation that singles out politicians as the only people who can protect themselves. We need to ensure that these kinds of legislations include everyone. So when we contact Mo Brooks, we tell him, you want to put forward a bill to protect life? You want to put forward a bill to allow people to protect themselves? Then it must include everyone. Why don't you back a national reciprocity? Why don't you push forward a national reciprocity? Because creating a piece of legislation that singles out congressmen's ability to carry firearms over everybody else's. Everybody else still has to follow the law, but congressmen do not. Is a very, very dangerous precedent, both historically and constitutionally speaking. We have learned throughout history that when we create legislation based on security and prosperity, we are not creating legislation based on principles. The principle here is the natural right to protect life and liberty and property. A natural right based on, as Samuel Adams says, the first law of nature, the duty of self-preservation. That is the principle here. But because we are not focused on principles, but rather on security, we have people who want to do the right things, but are achieving them in the wrong ways. It's why Samuel Adams said, no people will tamely surrender their liberties nor be easily subdued when knowledge is diffused and virtue is preserved. But on the contrary, when the people become universally ignorant and debauched in their manners, they will sink underneath their own weight without the aid of foreign invaders. Because the legislation that Mo Brooks is proposing is based on fear and security and not based on the principle of the right to keep and bear arms. Although he may have good intentions, he is actually going about it in the wrong way. Because history dictates that when government disarms the people, while those in government retain the right to keep, the ability to keep and bear arms, that tyranny will set in. Mo Brooks may not be a tyrant. He may not want to empower the tyrants. But the legislation that he is proposing today could arm tyrants in the future and maintain a situation where the people of America remain unarmed. These are the principles driven by historical fact that should drive us to contact Mo Brooks and say, look, you have good intentions here. Life is precious. We want to preserve life. But there's a specific reason why the Second Amendment says the right of the people and not a right of those in government. I'll remind you that there is proposed amendment to the Second Amendment by people in government, by people in power, to amend the Second Amendment to say the right of the people while in uniform to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. What Mo Brooks' proposed legislation would be is supporting that errant interpretation of the Second Amendment. He may not mean to do that. He may not even want to do that. But it's through this ignorance that we sink. And it's the education that we drive. So that we start making policies based on principles. And a principle as sincerely dear as the duty to self-preservation, the right to keep and bear arms, should demand our education. The Second Amendment was codified so that the government would not be permitted to disarm the people. Because you see, if you have to wait for 911 to come and protect you, if you have to wait and comply with government regulations on how and where and where you can protect yourselves, then you are a slave to those you depend upon. What keeps the majority in government from saying, well, this group of people, they don't deserve our protection, and now you don't have an ability to protect yourself, and those who were created and designed to protect you have decided they don't want to? It's this education that is so necessary. And I just have to think in my heart of hearts that if Mo Brooks and congressmen like him understood the history and the principles conveyed through the Second Amendment, then there wouldn't be proposed legislation specifically written for congressmen. As a matter of fact, there would be no legislation ever specifically granting privilege or right to congressmen that is not already existent within the people. If history and principle drove our policy, tell Mo Brooks, we don't want legislation that exempts congressmen from the laws that are enforced upon us. We want equal representation in government. We want equal representation under the law. And that should not be driven by position, place, or aristocracy. We are a constitutional republic that drives the laws of America, so that we do not have a privileged class. We need to support legislation that removes federal regulation for all people on the right to keep and bear arms. Period. And perhaps H.R. 38, the Conceal and Carry Reciprocity Act of 2017, is where we can begin that process, where we can begin that education of the inalienable right to keep and bear arms, possessed by all people through the nature of their creation. The weapon of my choice, don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up. Segment of the show. I'm glad I didn't give us any more to talk about other than our last subject here, this Bayview Park cross that was there for 48 years. I don't know that
Chris
we'll
Ann Hall
have
show.
A lot of time to
She's
talk about
Liberty's
this. Maybe we should take this up in the next show in detail, but I do want to talk to you about this because there's some very important things that must be seen here. We have U.S. District Court Federal Judge Roger Vinson giving the opinion that this cross violates the Establishment Clause of the Constitution and must be removed within 30 days. There are several bullet points here that I want us to consider before next week when we talk about this again. Number one, Roger Vinson, as a federal judge, does not have the constitutional authority to have an opinion in this matter. Article 3 delegates the power of the Supreme Court and any inferior courts, federal courts. Article 3 does not delegate the authority to the federal government to be involved in local cases. Some might argue that the 14th Amendment creates that jurisdiction. However, the 14th Amendment does not expand the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court within that text. There is no amendment to Article 3 in the 14th Amendment. Therefore, it cannot expand the authority of the Supreme Court or any inferior courts. Number two, Judge Vinson applies what is known in the legal field as the Lemon Test, a three-prong test to determine whether a government's activity is constitutional or not. And Vincent says, quote, Lemon is routinely criticized, but it is still the law of the land, and I am not free to ignore it, end quote. The Lemon Test was created by the Supreme Court through a Supreme Court opinion. It was not a law ratified by Congress. It was not signed into law by the president. It is a Supreme Court opinion. And for Vinson to classify it as, quote, the law of the land shows that he does not understand separation of powers within the constitutional structure. The Supreme Court cannot make law. That is a per se violation of separation of powers. Laws must be made by Congress and ratified into law either by the president or an overriding vote by Congress themselves. He says that he must follow the law of the land. Supreme Courts issue opinions, they don't issue law. And those opinions are only valid on the people in the courtroom at the time the opinion was issued, and if they are at the same time constitutional. Justice Vinson is free to develop his own understanding based on the specific measures of this case, because there is no law that dictates to him otherwise. Three, Vincent says, quote, count me among those who hope the Supreme Court will one day revisit and reconsider its Establishment Clause jurisprudence, but my duty is to enforce the law as it now stands. There is no law, Judge Vincent. And this idea that, number one, Supreme Court can make law, and number two, the only people that can overturn the law the Supreme Court has made is the Supreme Court themselves, is the very definition of despotism. If we believe as an American people that the Supreme Court makes law, and that the only people that can overturn that law are the people who made that law, reminding us that we do not elect anyone to the Supreme Court, nor do we have the authority or the ability to remove anybody from the Supreme Court. We have just admitted, with Judge Vincent's perspective, that America is not a constitutional republic, but an oligarchy of 9 kings and queens. The duty to enforce a law that is not just, that is not constitutional, does not exist. He did not take an oath to the Supreme Court of the United States. He took an oath to the Constitution of the United States. And that argument didn't hold up in Nuremberg, so it should not hold up here either. We will address this next week, because I want to talk about the solutions as well. Until then, God bless America.